Welcome to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast, where we are practicing the art of kindness and civil discourse and authenticity and storytelling. Our goal is to foster a healthy dialogue about race relations in our community. We seek common ground for common good and hope these conversations encourage you to build authentic relationships outside of your race or comfort zone. This season of the podcast is made possible by the generous support of the Oklahoma City Black Justice Fund. Thanks for tuning in and welcome to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. It's great to be with you today as we head towards the finish line with you all. We've enjoyed you listening in to multiple episodes. If this is your first time, welcome. We only have a few more episodes left before our final episode that we're excited to share with you, but we are excited about our guest today.
Great to be back and looking forward to our chat today with a well-accomplished community leader and advocate here in Oklahoma City, Ms. Davis.
Denavetta.
I was going to mess it up.
I'll respond.
But Denavetta is, or Ms. Davis, as I always refer to her when I see her out and about, is the president of the Northeast Oklahoma City Neighborhood Coalition and has been the longtime leader of Northeast Oklahoma City's JFK's neighborhood.
Yes, and Ms. Davis is joining us today to talk about her decades of experience building up neighborhoods on the east side of Oklahoma City, and we'll be getting into some specific issues related to environmental justice in areas where we live and where we serve, as well as other amazing positive things that are happening in the neighborhood. And so, Ms. Davis, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I am so pleased to be here.
Yeah, we're gonna have fun today. Miss Davis and I's paths crossed many years ago, and we have got to work together on the JFK Neighborhood Board. And so I've got to see behind the scenes and all the stuff that she does that no one really knows about. I mean, Miss Davis is everywhere in the city.
It is
really crazy. And I think everyone knows that too. Yeah. It's like, I'm not even surprised. You go to any community meeting, it's like, if
I just saw her last week, I'm like, am I going to see you on Monday?
she's just cruising around. And but I just know the emails, the coordination, all the stuff that she is doing behind the scenes where she does not get credit is phenomenal. I've been seeing it for years and years, and she's been doing it before I was even around. So let me not even say that. But it has been really cool as I've stepped into a leadership role with our neighborhood in JFK, which we'll get into. I've got to see just her presence and her grace as she's navigated all of these different relationships and different players in the community and organizations that we interact with has been really cool to see. So just thank you. I want to say that publicly on the pod for all the stuff that you've done for the neighborhood I live in, for the neighborhood we live in.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And so I would love to start with a little bit of background. I know you're from the green country, northeast part. I'm from Bartlesville, so just a little bit north of you. But tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, some things you enjoyed doing, and we'll kind of start there.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Muskogee, and I grew up in a village. And so all that I know is neighborhoods and community. Mm. I mean, that's what I saw, that's what I lived, that's what I experienced. So, you know, me being part of the community now is just like a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. That's just who I am, because that's what I saw. That's, like I said, that's what I experienced. But neighbors knew each other, we supported each other, we helped each other. We talked to each other. We visited each other. We sat on the porch. We sat out in the yard. You know, we borrowed sugar. I mean, you know, this. And so all of that. So it is so important to me that we know our neighbors, that we be good neighbors, that we support each other, that we don't just, you know, come home in the evening and go in the house and close the garage door and that's it. It's more than that. In order to be a neighborhood, you have to be a good neighbor. You have to be neighborly. You have to get to know the people that live next to you and not just know them when you see them, but know them by name. So that's important to me. That's just who I am.
Tell me a little bit about a memory that kind of encompasses kind of this village upbringing that you lived in? Is there maybe as a childhood memory that you have about a story of caring for one another, just kind of a fun story from your childhood?
Well, one of the things that I remember growing up in my neighborhood was there was a neighborhood church that had a bell. And so when anyone would transition, someone would ring that bell. And so we knew that somebody had transitioned at that particular time. And then we'd have a neighbor in each on each street that would come by and collect money or just share information about it, get a card or something. So that was something that I just remember. I know that probably didn't happen very much anymore, but I remember that so well that everybody would know. And the neighbor would come by, let us know who it was. Say we want to get some flowers or you know, taking up collection to get a card or to buy food or whatever it might be. So to me, that's, I mean, I don't know a better story that shows you about community, and especially in those times.
Tell me, I'm curious how your journey from Muskogee to Oklahoma City. How long have you been in Oklahoma City?
So I came to Edmond for college. And then Oklahoma City. So yeah, long time.
And we kept you.
A long time. And I've stayed. I mean, I've traveled a lot, but this is home base. You always have to have home base. So Oklahoma City is it. But
See, Edmond, that was Central State.
Yes, it was Central State at the time. That's now, right. UCO, yeah, yes. Now UCO, yes. Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Very few people will still recognize that change.
Yes, yes.
So back then, Ms. Davis, you and I called that highway that made it to Central State, we called it the Broadway Extension.
Yes.
Yeah, they call it something. They call it I-235 or something like that.
Yes, Broadway Extension. And there was not, you know, much going on in Edmond at the time. It was lots of vacant land and all of that. But
what did you study while you were there?
I studied business and library science. So I was a business major and a library science minor.
And then after, what did you...
After college, I decided that I needed to purchase a home. So our first home was in North Creston Hills. So because I grew up in a community, it was important to me that I find another community that was similar. I was looking for that, not just in North Creston Hills, but also in JFK. Since I grew up with that, that's what I wanted to experience. So North Creston Hills, and that was a growing neighborhood, very active neighborhood. And so raised my kids here, a son and a daughter, raised them there. And they experienced the village atmosphere and the experience. And so it was just great.
What school did your kids go to?
My son went to the fifth grade. He went to Crescent Hills, so he could walk there. And then my daughter, she went to Mount St. Mary's. And yeah. She went to Learners Academy first. I don't know if you all remember that. Learners Academy on 63rd, yes.
Yeah. So I know you're the president at the JFK neighborhood in that community. Can you paint a picture? You did a wonderful job of painting a picture of where you grew up in Muskogee, but can you paint a picture for our listeners of the JFK neighborhood or that community, where it sits, you know, what are the boundaries, what you love about it, and what that community is like today?
So JFK, the boundaries are Northeast 4th to Northeast 8th, and Martin Luther King to Lincoln. And so if you think about that location, you might remember that was the area where blacks could only live. We were limited to that space south of A Street for decades because of Jim Crow. And so it's a historical neighborhood. And the neighborhood is great. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. Yeah. But JFK, the neighborhood is great. We're growing. The neighbors are good. We have a neighborhood association, very active neighborhood association. And so I've been president since, I think, 2013, so a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we continue to grow. There are new development going on, and we're looking forward to some businesses on Northeast 4th. So we're just excited. We have a senior housing facility there. That's Old Dunbar. Mm. It's senior housing now, Dunbar Commons, yeah. Senior Commons. We have a gated community, Fairhaven. We have apartments on 7th across from Douglas, which is fairground. You know, Douglas used to be the fairground. So we're flourishing. We're growing. You know, we have our challenges.
Yeah, and we'll lots talk of about that.
Yeah,
we'll
we have challenges. That. But as far as what a neighborhood looks like, JFK is it.
That's good. I wish you could see her face when she says, I love my neighborhood. She lights up. Like, she's, like, smiling, like, really big. Like, this is your baby.
That's really
comforting.
We had a really great neighbor's night out this year, I think. That's been something that happens once a year. That's kind of happening across the city. Our neighbors get together more frequently than that. But it's an event that happens once a year across the city where neighborhoods get together and for an event. And this year felt really special. We kind of did it in a new place. We had live music. We had food vendors there. We had kids running around playing games, and pictures were being taken. And it was so much fun. Do you have anything to add to that?
We had
special partnerships.
Absolutely. So we've been doing this for many, many years. And we move around to different locations within the neighborhood. So last year, we were invited to partner with Paige Woodson, the complex. And we had Neighbors Night out there. And we had a goat meat tasting that was sponsored by Langston. They provided all the meat. And so that went over very well. But this year...
Did you say goat?
Yes. Yes. You know, the goat farm, goat research farm at Langston. And so we partnered with them.
Okay. You're just kind of going past that. Like that's a common everyday kind of meal.
Let me tell you a story about that really quick.
Yeah. She's not, you know, like, she's like, yeah, okay, goat.
Yeah, goat meat. Well, so I helped do some design for the neighborhood flyers and different things. And so Miss Davis will send me emails about details and, you know, putting stuff together. And one of the bullet points was goat meat tasting. And I was like, is she joking with me or what? And it actually turned out to be really amazing. Like, people really, really enjoyed the experience. So
So we don't have to talk about this, but there is some cultural context to goat meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I wanted to kind of pause and hit that. It is by no accident that I think it is done by Langston, and that that you decided that this was one of the things that was going to happen at that. So people need to do the homework when they talk about goat meat. I'm joking, like, I don't know what it is,
but I
know exactly what it is. And I've had goat ribs and that stuff. And so somebody need to do the homework on that, unless you just wanted to give them some.
No, I'll let them do their homework.
Okay.
So we had, goat meat. We had goat ribs, had goat tacos, had goat meatballs. And so this year, individuals, you know, cooked the dishes. This year we had a chef.
Okay.
And so he prepared a variety of dishes. They were all great. And then just to get a feel for what people thought about it and to look into the future, restaurants may want to serve that in the area. So this was a survey. So, you tasted the goat in the various ways it was prepared, and then you completed a survey so we could get a feel for, you know, what you thought, what you like, what you didn't like, what are your suggestions. So it went very, very well. But like Taylor said, it was a great evening. We partnered with Bistro 46. Mm-hmm. They provided some goat burgers, as well as some of their, you know, some other things as well. So we had activities with the kids. We had some vendors. So there are going to be several businesses located on 4th. Once that project, that Paige Woodson project, is finished, phase 6. And so several of those businesses that have already committed to that space were there. They were vendors. And so one was a sweet shop. And she had some mini cinnamon rolls and some sugar cookies, which were delicious. We had activities for kids. So we just had a great time, great time. And a band, like you said.
Yeah.
Band was great, yes.
Amazing.
Yes, and we had great attendance. And people, you know, brought their lawn chairs and just had a great time.
So all of that really shapes how wonderful the community is. And I can just visualize all of the activity and then what it must look like in between these events, what the neighbors are like. And I have that because I have a lot of friends and family that live in that area. So one of the things that I continually hear about, but I don't really understand it because I don't live there. Right. And I think it's very, even a guy like me who has good relationships and close relationships in that area, I still don't understand this challenge as well. And so I want you to talk a little bit about the environmental concerns that become a challenge in that issue, and especially the explosions. Can you talk a little bit about
Absolutely.
That? Absolutely. Help me understand.
Okay, so this has been going on way before I moved to JFK. I had a house built there in 2008, so I've been experiencing since then. So there's a recycling plant. There are two of them on Reno. And one of them causes... We believe and we found that they are the ones that are creating the explosions. And the explosions occur because they receive cars that are already crushed. And there's supposed to be some paperwork, some documentation, letting them know whether the cars have been, whether there's gasoline in the cars or not, in the tanks or not. I guess the majority of time that documentation is true. There's no gas in the tank. But then occasionally there is gasoline in the tank. And when they go through that crusher, it causes an explosion, not only with their equipment, but throughout the neighborhood. And those explosions, we've been tracking those explosions since 2011. And we also work with the Housing Authority, and they've been tracking since 2015. And so... these explosions occur, and nobody calls us, nobody says, okay, it's happening now. It just happens. You can be in the shower, you can be cooking, you can just be watching TV, you know, just lounging, just enjoying your space, and there you have an explosion. And it causes the windows to shake, things are falling off the walls, you know, neighbors' walls have shown cracks in them. And so just a variety of things. And so the explosions are just one of the issues. That's the one that we've been really focusing on. But there are some other issues as well.
Okay, so what has been done, and I know that I know this a lot, it's been so big that the news has gotten involved in this over the years, but why can you not get this stopped?
Probably historical reasons, for political reasons, probably the cost of moving them out. And I think all of those are the reasons, and nobody wants to, or nobody has stepped up the plate to challenge that. So what happened with JFK, we were experiencing it. We were reporting it to the Action Center. One day I called to report it, and they told me that they were no longer accepting our complaints. And so that's when we decided, well, we would publish our own report and talk with Taylor. And when we started documenting and did a report, our first report was 2018, I think. And so we said, well, we need something. If we're not going to be able to rely on the Action Center to report this or help us with this, we need to do it ourselves. So we did the report, and we start making it available, shared it with our elected officials. And at first, people didn't believe us. They didn't think it was happening. You know, because I guess the reason that they stopped from the Action Center is because whenever they would send somebody out, they didn't experience what we experienced. I mean, because we don't know when it was going to happen. It just happened.
It's very random.
And so, yeah, random. And so that was kind of the start on, okay, we got to do more ourselves. We can't really depend on anybody to help us. We've got to, you know, we've got to get out there, and whatever it takes, we need to make sure that people are aware and try to get help wherever we can. And so, like I said, we shared it with lots of people, and they didn't believe us. Well, it didn't happen. You know, we've been tracking it, too, and it's not happening at this place. We don't know where it's happening. We don't know who's causing it. We don't know when it's happening. It, you know, the time that you have logged doesn't match the time that blah, blah, blah. And so, so that's where we just kind of took the rein and said, okay, we've got to try to solve this ourselves. And so we had meetings. We first started, Councilman Pettis was in office at the time, and he was the first one. And he was, you know, communicating and trying to help us. And then Pastor Cooper was interim, and we worked with him. And it was his suggestion to build a wall, but that was kind of turned down initially. We thought that wasn't going to happen. And then Councilwoman Nice, we start working with her. And then I guess it was in, was it 21 maybe? I think it's 2021. In 2020 or 21, we were told that there was a meeting called. We were told that the recycling plant had decided to build a wall, a noise barrier wall, because they have other plants. They also have a plant in Houston. And so they had done that and built a wall, a noise barrier wall in Houston. And so we thought, okay, what happened that this is happening all of a sudden? You know, first you didn't want to talk to us. You didn't want to hear it. You didn't believe it. Now all of a sudden it's a wall. So we didn't know until later that the company had been fined almost $250,000 for air quality issues. But anyway, so the wall, I think, went up in maybe March of 2021, and a 35 to 40 foot wall. And so it has not stopped the explosions. They're not as frequent, but they're still happening. We had 3 in one day just last week. And so...
Does it change the capacity, the wall help at all?
I would say it has decreased the number of explosions, but it hasn't stopped them. And we want them stopped.
Right.
So what we also did, and kind of in the interim before the wall was built, we reached out to OU, the College of Architecture and Environmental Science. We did that, I think, probably in 2018 when we did the report. We met with them, but they weren't able. We were wanting to do a capstone class and have them work with us, but it didn't happen then. So fast forward, I kept communicating with the professor, Dr. Knox. I just, every now and then, I would just send him a message, this is happening, blah, blah, blah. And so I sent him an article, and it was, I think it was the last one that was written in the Oklahoman, and I think 2021 or something like that. And so he said, we got to do something. And so we had our first capstone class, and they did excellent work. We had no idea what the result of their work would be. But they did a report, and they had some recommendations for us. So they worked with us the entire semester. The first semester of that school year, they did some background work. And then the spring semester, they actually came out, did a tour of the neighborhood and the industries in the area, and they did a report. I don't remember how many pages. It was hundreds of pages. But the recommendations that they gave us are some that we're still working on.
Right.
And one of the recommendations was to put some greenery and some trees in front of the wall, the noise barrier wall. And, of course, because of the – it's close to a railroad track, and because of the railroad variance, we weren't able to do that. And so fast forward, we partnered with Oklahoma City Beautiful, and now we have a grant. We're going to put 50 trees along the median on Northeast 4th from Lottie to Martin Luther King. And that's going to, you know, we hope that will help buffer.
Buffer.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That the explosions and the vibrations from the the recycling plant. And they also had some other recommendations we've been working on. And so we're just excited. And the other thing about the trees, I'm kind of fast forwarding here, but in addition to the 50 trees along the median, every neighbor that wants a tree, up to one or two trees, up to 225 can get a tree. So we've been involved in that program. And so, you know, communicating with neighbors, because, you know, we have a lot of sidewalks and pavement, and so that causes heat. And so
powerful.
Those are things that we've been working on. I kind of fast forward, you know, skip some things, but we can go back. But
Tito, you live over there, and the history of those explosions, how old is that company? How long have they been there doing that?
I mean, decades. And they have a history of this type of behavior. It's part of their business, but that happening across the country, and their lawsuits and all these different things towards this international company. And so I think what Ms. Davis is highlighting is there's a lot of history that she has skipped over and highlighted. And this is even recent history, I would say, right?
Right.
And so, you know, we'd have a 4-hour podcast if we wanted to go through all of this. I think the thing that is shocking to me, because I didn't grow up in the neighborhood and I've only, you know, probably lived there the last 8 to 10 years, is all the other issues that are happening alongside of this. She only talked about one issue, right? Like, there's a plastic plant that has caught on fire 3 or 4 times, and plastic has been burning in the air over our neighborhood. And there is a cement factory that is on another half of our neighborhood that blows in dust and covers our neighbors' cars and trees and plants. And so our neighbors are kind of fearful of, I don't really want to eat this food. Like, I want to plant something, but I can't because there are, you know, there's this dust and powder that covers our food. Like, are we endangering ourselves of what we're breathing in and what we're eating? Kind of all these factors that kind of come into this topic of environmental justice, which we don't necessarily need to get into right now. But Ms. Davis, I'm curious to know, and maybe we are jumping into this, is there is a racial component to this that I'd love to kind of to step into. This is a historically Black community, predominantly Black community still. And as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, this community was forced to live in a certain area. And as we know from different cities around the country, historically Black folks have been moved to areas of a city that is of lowest value, of the most danger, the lowest environmental quality. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. Around the country, you have neighborhoods that are built around or close to industries. And so it's just an ongoing battle. I mean, and of course, JFK is, you know, part of that, because across on 4th Street South, we have these industries. And then farther further south, you've got on Reno. So, you know, and probably in other neighborhoods, it wouldn't have the industries that we have. But we've been building up, and we didn't have full disclosure when we built. probably if, you know, a lot of people had full disclosure, they might not have moved. Mm-hmm. But I think people have stayed because they love the community and tried to work through these issues. But yeah, this is an ongoing. It's nothing. It's maybe new to people thinking it's new to Oklahoma City or JFK, but no, it's going on all over the country.
And you got to travel. I know you've traveled for some national organizations that are doing community building and environmental justice things. So yeah, it's not just in Oklahoma City. It's in our neighborhood, so it's most we're most passionate about that.
But absolutely,
this is happening in different areas around the country. The thing you did mention right now was, you know, as we moved in, there wasn't a flyer, you know, that was given to you saying, okay, this is what you're signing up when you build or when you buy or when you rent.
Right.
So there's a component of our neighborhood that has the kind of economic ability to probably move, right? If that was a big issue, I can hear people saying, well, why don't you just move? This is an issue, right? Mm-hmm. There is that. But I will say, in kind of what we started off with the podcast, was JFK is an amazing neighborhood. We don't want to move. Like, we have amazing neighbors. We do these amazing events. Like, it's a community that people want to be involved with.
Right.
But why are neighbors having to deal with these environmental issues, right? And then the other is we do have a percentage of our neighbors who financially can't afford to move. And so they are kind of stuck in a neighborhood that feels like there are things that might be detrimental to them in the air or kind of the noise. I don't have any children yet. I do want a family in the future. And it makes it hard to think about raising a child or putting my kid for nap time and these big explosions happening and waking up my child. Or we have neighbors who served our military mm-hmm. and have PTSD, and these loud right. explosions are triggers to our neighbors. And the question is why does this part of our city have to deal with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a question. One of the things that we ask is our neighborhood killing us? Because we don't know the answer to that question, because, you know, we have these air quality issues that Taylor mentioned about the dust. We have smells, a smell of sulfur, a smell of natural gas. We have the smoke, or we have the dust. You know, not only is it on the film on the dust on our mailboxes and cars, also on the leaves of our trees. So it's just ongoing, but we are fighting. We are not just sitting still. We are fighting.
Tell me, I don't know, and I'm just going to play. I like to think about solutions. I mm-hmm. love to think about solutions. Mm-hmm. As difficult as it is, because sometimes it's really hard to find them. But let's say the city council or the state just said, okay, none of us sitting here had any part of the decisions of displacement of the redlining or all that kind of stuff, and we recognize it and we own it. It happened. Oklahoma City did it. The state mm-hmm. of Oklahoma did it. But that guy set up shop there. He built his business there. Those plants was built there, all that kind of stuff. If we had that, if we were to do it all over again, we wouldn't do it that way. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. How do I fix it now, even if I own up to knowing what they did, those leaders in the past did? How do I fix it now? What is the solution? What needs to happen? If you had a magic wand, what needs to happen?
Okay, well, what needs to happen is those industries need to move.
And but so, Ms. Davis.
So, yes, I know that's a hard sell because it would cost. But
not only cost, but let's say my daddy, Jock Ewan, way back when, worked his butt off to get that and build this company to what it is, and you're asking me to move because, you know what I mean?
Don't let Waylon bully you right now. Don't let that happen on the podcast.
No, but it is about, we're talking about neighborhood. It is about being a good neighbor.
Yes, that's it.
That's what it's about. Mm-hmm. And so we went into those meetings. Every meeting that we went in, we're willing to be a good neighbor. Are you? Mm. And the answer, not just by words, but by deeds, has been no.
Resentment.
Yes. And so that's what we look at. I mean, about being a good neighbor.
Can I?
Get me. Let me
talk to Cuban real quick.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to add. I knew somebody's thinking what I'm saying.
Yes, like, that's a phenomenal answer. This is a very complex topic, mm-hmm. and there are complex solutions here, mm-hmm. but that has been something that, as Ms. Davis said, what I have seen is a graciousness from the neighbors for many, many years to partner and be good neighbors. One small example, this happened not even 4 weeks ago on neighboring, is they have oil wells and oil rigs in our neighborhood that are still semi-active or mm-hmm. active. So they'll come in and they'll drill and they'll set up the rig and all that. For months and months, they're drilling. And on their property, the grass is probably 5.5 feet tall. And so if you drive at Northeast 4th Street and MLK, you will see the grass on the corner. You'll see a rig, mm-hmm. and then you will see the grass that is 5.5 feet tall. And they will not mow it. And so that we have neighbors who have to walk there. They don't have a lot of they have transportation issues. And that is a barrier for them to getting to the bus stop and all of the things, mm-hmm. right? And so on the tiniest of scales, this is just a reminder to me that the people don't live there. It doesn't affect them on a day-to-day basis. They're doing things, making money, and get to not have to live with any of the consequences. And so it's something as small as just honoring the neighborhood of just mow your grass mm-hmm. to let it look good and that people can walk and feel safe and all of those things is one example for that that particular company. Mm-hmm. I think there are solutions that these companies could do because they're the industry experts. Miss Davis has never crushed a car. You know, I was like, that was not her. She did not study that. She did not go to school for that. You guys are the experts. You guys have solutions to do this. Help come to the table and help us understand, are there things that you can do to change that?
It just feels like the city could put a demand that you put an extra layer of checks and balances to make sure that the car that you crush does not have fuel in it.
Yes, we've had these conversations. That's the thing.
It just feels easy. That feels easy.
Yeah. So they did. We did have a meeting with the mayor because I have to give kudos to Mayor Holt. He did respond. He did hold a meeting with all those people that needed to be in the room. The assistant city managers, the code enforcement people, the city attorneys. And on the day that we met, this has been a few years back, he said, well, what can we do today? And so one of the things that we were able to do in that one meeting that nothing had been done prior to that is that we were experiencing the crushing, the explosions before 7 a.m. You imagine, you're not up, not ready for work yet. You're in bed and you have an explosion. So they were occurring before 7 a.m. So on the day that we met, the mayor asked the fire marshal to write a letter to the recycling plant saying that 7 a.m. was the time. They could not change it because of daylight saving time or not, but they could not begin business before 7. That was a help mm-hmm. because, like I said, it was occurring before then. But them moving out or either just stop that part of their business, I'm not sure what that might look like, but I do know that there are some things happening across Reno with the First American Museum and the expansion there with the hotel and the amphitheater and all the construction that's going on there. And Reno is a gateway to that. And so I can't imagine that being the gateway with those explosions, those hotels and those other businesses there, that will continue. I believe that something.
Things about to change, is what you're saying.
I believe that something could possibly change because that's not a good look.
I gotcha.
And it's not a good feel. Certainly not a good look driving to that area. And I know they're expecting millions of visitors to come to that new location. And so with the work that we're doing and that we've been doing, also, I want to kind of go back to I work with OU students, work with the environmental science and also environmental studies. Our environmental studies, they did interviews and all of the information that they've presented to us, all the reports and all the interviews is available at the Metropolitan Library System in their archives. So it is documented, so anybody who wants to know more about it can find it there. But we'll be starting our third year working with environmental studies in January. They've done reports and just provided some helpful information. So we have lots of documentation.
That's good.
If we want to move forward, as we move forward. So.
Yeah, I think the last two things I'll mention, and then I'd love to ask you another question. Kind of, I know there's some things you are very excited about, and so I want to give you space to share.
Okay.
Is one, it's interesting how things begin to change when there are financial dollars and things involved, right?
Yes.
It's like, I guess my hope and my sadness is that why does it take this massive development for there to be a conversation about things of changing after a community has been
suffering
for decades, right? Yeah. And so that's where my heart breaks for this. So I love to hear that you're hopeful for that, and that's something that I appreciate over the years, is you have been a constant force for, one, positivity and grace and clear communication, even though we've suffered some big setbacks when we thought the city was tracking and doing these things and we found out they weren't. You know, there's just times and times that we have faced some setbacks, and you've been an amazing leader in that. In an example for me specifically, I'll speak for myself on how to handle those situations. And so I've been watching you for a very long time, and I just want to say thank you for being an amazing leader in that. You're also a leader in a lot of other things, one of which is the Northeast Oklahoma Neighborhood Coalition. I think you're excited about a few things there. So I would love for you to be able to share some things that are on your heart in regards to kind of neighborhoods across our city.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, for decades, there was nothing going on in Northeast Oklahoma City. There's dirt and businesses and all kinds of thriving going all around us, downtown even, but not in Northeast Oklahoma City. So we started to see a little action, and so I've convened three other neighborhood presidents, Northeast Oklahoma City neighborhood presidents, and said, okay, these are things that are going on. We don't have a clue about what's going on. We see this happening. Nobody's talked to us. Nobody's shared anything. You know, they're in various stages from beginning to almost end. So what can we do so that we are informed, we are aware, we are engaged, we are involved? And so the Northeast Oklahoma City Neighborhood Coalition was formed. We started with four neighborhood presidents. That was in 2020. Now we have 18 members of our coalition, and send some community members. And so it's just an amazing thing how we've come together, you know, because there's a myth that we don't work together well. And so it just dispels that myth that, yes, when we have a common goal, we have, you know, and we have a need, we can come together and work together. So it's just been great to see that. So we meet, we still meet via Zoom, because even though we could meet in person, and we do, you know, annually during the Christmas time, but we meet via Zoom because some of our members still work, and so that gives them an opportunity to still participate. But we meet every month, the second Thursday of every month, and we invite guests. We support each other. We share information. We are tracking Northeast Oklahoma City developments. We have a list of about 40 that are going on, from 0 to 40, that are going on just in Northeast Oklahoma City. And we review those, we update those, we remove them when they're completed. But so we are aware of what's going on in Northeast Oklahoma City. We've been engaged in various activities with some of our neighborhoods. If they have an issue, now we don't get in front of them. We don't lead them. We just support them, because we're all individual neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. But we are there for support. So when Capitol View was opposing the proposal to build tiny homes for veterans in their area, well, they called on us, you know, asked us for support, and we attended their meetings, and just attended the city council meetings, and was there for support. We've also been there for, you know, other organizations when they needed us, you know, with the various neighborhoods. So we're available to support each other and help each other. We also have some neighborhoods that have not reorganized since, convened since COVID. And then we have some that haven't been organized for years. And so we work with them to try to help them. We had Martin Luther King neighborhood. It joined our organization as an associate member. And since they've joined, they've become a general member. They're a neighborhood association, and they're a strong neighborhood initiative. a neighborhood. So we're just excited about the work that we're doing and how we're helping each other, how we're keeping informed, how we're staying engaged. So we were not even in the room before. Now we're in the room, sometimes at the
run
table.
Run in the room. I will say that every thriving neighborhood has a champion. And you are that champion for, it sounds like, not just one neighborhood. You're mm-hmm. a champion for several neighborhoods. And I don't know how I can help from my capacity, but I love neighborhoods and I love community. And feels like I need to know all the people and the players. So, I don't know. Invite me.
Okay.
Especially when you start serving goat. Okay. You know, that kind of thing. Right? You are absolutely fantastic at that. And I will say, from a person through some of the hats that I wear that has to pick up the phone and deal with people that have a variety of different complaints or variety of different issues, things that they are very, very passionate about. I'm just going to be honest. There are some people, most of them, are very, very easy to hang up on. But let me tell you, your passion and the way you do it, there is not a single person on earth that would hang up on you. You have to be heard, and you make sure that you are. And so you need to teach a class, you know, on stick-to-itness and how to be heard and how to get people to respond and attempt to address the issues, because you've truly been a champion at that for years. I mean, I can remember when I was a sergeant of engaging with you on several things, and you even championing and behind my back, you were talking, saying good things about my work, and I know you were. And so, and it pays off. So I appreciate it, and I thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Do you have any last thoughts, dreams, things that you're thinking about the future for the organizations you lead, anything like that? I want to kind of give you the last mic.
Well, for JFK, I want us to just continue to thrive. We have new people that are moving in. We have Paige Woodson Project. They're in phase 4, 5, and 6 now. It's been a long-term relationship with them since the very beginning. It's an example of neighborhood private-public
partnerships.
Mm-hmm. It's an excellent example of that, because we were with them from the very beginning. Did we get everything that we wanted? Absolutely not. But we've continued that relationship, and it's been a good one. I mean, we've had some that haven't been the same. They haven't been good neighbors, but, you know, we have some great examples of developers that have been good neighbors. So we're just looking forward to our continued growth, and we're going to keep working on our environmental issues. No matter what comes our way, we're going to just keep plugging away.
Believe that.
You're just going to keep plugging away. And for the coalition, we've been working on this for a while now. We have about 25 or 26 neighborhoods that are in Northeast Oklahoma City. We have 18 that are part of the coalition. So we are going to work. We've invited.
I see where you're going with that. Yeah, it's a call to action.
Yeah. We want every neighborhood to be part of the coalition in some way, whether they're, you know, an associate member just getting started, or you know, they're reorganizing. So we want every neighborhood to be a part of it.
Is there a website?
Yes, neokcnc.org.
Say it one more time.
neokcnc.org.
I love it. Well, Ms. Davis, thank you so much for joining us today. I know we could have gone 3 more hours if we wanted to really dig into this. So thank you for giving us kind of an overview of the work that you are doing and kind of sharing some of those details with us. We really appreciate you coming on the pod today. It was great to spend some time talking, and that's kind of where I'll leave it.
Yep. And let me just say, as always, we are seeking common ground for the common good. I'm Waylon Cubitt.
And I'm Taylor Doe.
And this is the United Voice Oklahoma podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. For more episodes, subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review. please share the show with your friends and family. It really helps us to get the conversation out to more people. This podcast is a production of United Voice Oklahoma, one of the initiatives of the Stronger Together movement, and is produced by OKC Good. This current season is made possible by the generous support of the Oklahoma City Black Justice Fund.